Accession number 13945,
Reel 3. Mr. Davenport, Reel 3. Did you run into the enemy on this voyage?
We always had to be prepared for the enemy, that is, ships, aircraft, submarines, and so on. But more so as you approach the UK. In this particular instance, which I was going to tell you about, it was we had to be very careful and very alert with our recognition signals. And this particular day, an aircraft came over, and I had to get up and arrange the aircraft recognition signals and have a nice big lamp, which was our 6-inch oldest, trained on the aircraft to make our identification. The aircraft was a Spitfire. It came across very, very quickly. We had to be very careful here because, obviously, we did look like a German submarine. There's no doubt about it. And we had to be very careful. They knew that Air Force knew that we had Dutch submarines, and they were expecting the Dutch submarine. They obviously had a signal saying that we could be expected in that area. However, we still had to be alert. And an amusing incident happened there because the Dutch captain, Carnebeek, his name was, Captain Carnebeek, he asked in English the Dutch signalman, who was near to him, "What sort of plane is that, please?" And my friend, the signalman Bill Corver, said, "It is Spitbomber, Spitbomber." And of course, this caused a lot of amusement because my friend had just really forgotten to say Spitfire instead. And that took the seriousness away. The aircraft responded to our signal, and we were jolly glad that he did, because quite a number of other aircraft came over later on, and we had to apply the same procedures. So we were jolly glad when we got into Falmouth and safely alongside.
Had your liaison duties gone well aboard ship, or had you had any problems because of language and so on?
Well, you might say problems, but then again, at that time I was young and very happy on board, and I suppose later on sometimes some of the things would have appeared very serious. But there was one particular instance when we were on our way from Falmouth to Dunoon in Scotland, and we were at sea. It was at night time. I had to put various books away and so on, and I thought, now I might as well start picking up some of the Dutch phrases which I may have to learn, you know, when I'm on the bridge and so on. Anyway, the ship's company were well aware of this, and were beginning to join in the fun of telling me what to say and what not to say. So that one morning I had to go up on the bridge, and as I was about to go up the conning tower, the Dutch boy said, "Don't forget, when you go on the bridge, you say, Goeiemorgen, Roer." Well, you see, Goeiemorgen means good morning, but Roer, I didn't know what that was, you see. So I said, "What does Roer mean?" And they said, "Oh, it means good morning, First Lieutenant." "Oh," I said. I said, "Do I not say Goeiemorgen, meneer? Good morning, sir?" Yes, that is all right for officers, but he is a First Lieutenant and you use a special thing for him. Yes. Goeiemorgen, Roer. Right. Up I went onto the bridge and I said, "Goeiemorgen, Roer. I beg your pardon." He said, "You tell me in English what you are saying." I said, "Goeiemorgen, Roer." "I see. I want it in English. Tell me, what do you say?" I said, "It means good morning, sir." "Who tell you it means that?" "I've got a Dutch English book. You got a Dutch English book. Where is it?" It's on the shore. I left it ashore. Did you? I see. I think you're telling lies. Now, I'll tell you. Who'll tell you what you have been saying? Now, tell me their names. Now, you tell me there'll be no troubles at all. If you tell me now, we forget it all. I said, I don't know anybody. So you tell a lie. And when we get to England, we are going to put you in English prison. Now. And of course, he then shouted down to the control room a list of names. These were, he knew who they were. And these had to come up, and he gave them a rocket, all of them, and sent them down below again. Later on, I had to go down the control by myself, and everybody burst out laughing. And I said, what did I actually say? Tell me in English. They said, you said to him, good morning, Ginger. You see, he had a nice big crop of ginger hair. And they used to, also, he had a ginger beard. And, of course, they had another one ready for me. And I nearly said it. And that was to be, good morning, rat face. Well, thank God I didn't say that. And that was, of course, an amusing incident to me. But, of course, it could have been more serious because this officer could have had me on a charge.
You said that you were heading towards Dundee. Was it Dundee or Dunoon that you were going to?
We went to Dunoon and we stayed, received a signal from the depot ship, Berthforth Port. And I told the captain that we had been told to berth on the port side, sir. I think I will berth on the starboard side. Well, here said Berthforth Port, sir. May I make a signal now, sir? Ask him to confirm. Just tell him I berth starboard side. So I made a signal to tell him that we intend to berth on the starboard side. And they replied that it would be quite impossible to berth on the starboard side. So we had to go to the fourth, on the port side of the... And that's why I always remember that particular signal, because I thought... Surely we've got to settle where we could berth in the next few minutes because there was a lot of hail and it was very stormy, hail, rain. Oh, it was terrible conditions and we got alongside okay. And then we stayed there for a few days and then we were off to the Scarpa Flow. We went into Scarpa Flow and from there we moved round to Dundee. That was to be the... That was a naval base there, the 9th Submarine Flotilla. It was a base where they had the French, Norwegian, Dutch, and Polish submarines. And there were also one or two British submarines. But at that particular time, our submarine, 019, was to go into dock. And in after a few days at Dundee, the submarine sailed further south down to Grangemouth. And there at Grangemouth, the submarine was docked. I left the submarine after a few days and I had to stay at HMS Ambrose, the submarine base at Dundee. And when I got into the mess, it was 11B mess, all my messmates, they were signalmen and telegraphists, they were off the French submarine Ruby, the French submarine Junon, the Dutch submarine O-15, the Norwegian submarine Eula, there were one or two Polish boats, I think one called B-1, for some reason, and they were all liaison signalmen and liaison telegraphists in this mess. They were all off different submarines, so that when their submarines came into the harbour, they would all go into the HMS Ambrose and would be accommodated and victualled in that mess, 11B mess, HMS Ambrose. We had to use hammocks, of course, in this building. It was an old building. Previously, it had been a jam factory belonging to Keeler's, I believe, Keeler's Jams. And the actual address of that place was Carolina Port, Dundee. That was the address used. HMS Ambrose, Carolina Port, Dundee. Other submarines would go on patrol from there, as I say, but in my particular case, my boat was down at Grangemouth. What was I doing in Dundee during the time that the boat was in dock? Well, we spent most of our time going up to a building called an orphanage. I believe it was called Mayfield Orphanage. And some officers were accommodated there. And in another building quite near, there was a wireless office. All the CBs and signal books were taken to this orphanage. It was manned by Wrens, and as I said, naval officers were there. And we, every day, would have to go up, draw the books out, and bring them up to date with corrections. Apart from that, we had no other duties at all, so life was fairly calm and smooth. And so, for that particular period in Dundee, I would say it was the quietest time for me in the war, where I did not see any air raids or anything like that in Scotland at all, or in Dundee in Scotland, and the city of Dundee itself was a very nice place for us to be. There was all the facilities for football and any sports we wanted, swimming baths and so on. There was a ship there, very much like in appearance to HMS Victory, but its name was, and it's still there, is HMS Cressy, an old wooden hulk of a ship, an old frigate. And so there was a small number of people on there, I think mainly reservists.
Had you known anything about submarines before you joined or anything?
I'd never ever been on a submarine in my life before. Ever, and I'd never anticipated going on one either. I may have seen one, but that's about as much as I can say.
Did you go on any patrols with R19?
Well, as I say, we, to let you understand, we had our refit at Grangemouth, and after trials on the west coast of Scotland, the submarine then went out to the Far East. We went to Trincomalee to start with, and the base was there. We did one patrol from there, and then we, from that patrol where we sacked one or two small coasters, from there we went down to Fremantle, which was to be the new base down at Fremantle on the west coast of Australia.
What can you tell me about the sinking of those small coasters?
Lucky stuff. First of all, before we talk about sinking of any ships at all, our first duty was normally to go and lay our mines. There were 40 mines carried on board the ship, 20 either side. They were in bins, two in each bin. And I can tell you that until those mines were laid, there was a lot of nervous tension on board. They were not loaded onto the submarine till the last minute, and then we went straight direct to the area to lay the mines. Now, first of all, I have to tell you this, that before you think about sinking ships and so on, we had to get to this patrol area. And the worst part about it, would anyone that's good on this would tell you, is getting through the Lombok Straits. Now, these straits run between Bali and Lombok. Bali and Lombok. And either side of these straits, there are shore batteries, and patrol boats going up and down, and it was packed with them. They also had aircraft going over as well. They knew submarines were going through the straits to get into the Java Sea instead of going all the way round. So this is the way we went through. Now, to get through straits where there are strong currents and there are patrol vessels up top with their echo sounders going, listening for you, what is the best idea is to get to a good depth where it is judged by the bathymograph to be safe for you. Now, in that particular area, it was between 90 and 120 feet was a good area, a good depth, I should say, a good depth whereby you could get through without the noise from your propellers or anything like being heard so easily. So you would not stand as much chance of being detected by that method, using the bathymograph readings. And then you would find a good layer of water which would help you to safely get through the straits. Unfortunately, on every occasion we went through, we ran into trouble with these small patrol craft who, once they knew you were around, they would be dropping depth charges all over the place, really, without any great accuracy, I thought, but really to deter you from going through. Now, with 40 mines on board, this was very, very dangerous. And so we would get through and go straight to the area and lay the mines. Laying the mines itself was a particular skill which these Dutch naval officers knew all about. Having the mine to drop, then you've got to replace the weight, compensating that loss of weight with water. You've got to use the speed of the submarine so that the mine drops not when the boat's going too fast or too slow, so that they are land in a proper pattern and equidistant between them all. And a proper minefield laid like that takes an awful lot of concentration. So this was done with a great deal of skill by the Dutch officers on board. I really had a lot of admiration for them laying these mines. I can tell you that there was a great deal of relief on board too, on the faces when they all realised that the mines had been laid. Now we can get on with the patrol. Of course, this really became sort of secondary to us because we thought it was the mines really that worried everybody. So on our first patrol, we were able to sight very many small vessels, and it was not really worth going after them because they were so small. But we did sink a coastal steamer, a merchant vessel called the Karee Maru. The Karee Maru. It was a very small coaster, and after two or three rounds, the coaster turned away. And this is when we then turned after her, and we wanted to get it over quickly. And the gun layer, who was called Bob Sculter, a very good gun layer, he got it with the next shot. And then he put two more into her, and we dived and got out of the way. Then that.
This was off Java, was it?
This was in the Java Sea. And I can't exactly remember the exact position now, but that was all that happened on that patrol. And then we went straight down to Fremantle to the next patrol. Now, first of all, you have to remember that going on patrol from Fremantle, it would take a week to get to your patrol billet, and it would take a week to get back. So that leaves you, say, a 5-week patrol, 3 weeks on the billet. But they, I think the average was, if I remember rightly, it looked like a 4-week patrol. I think we did a 5-week patrol, but I think average was 4 weeks. And then we would have 2 weeks in harbour and out again. Now, that was the theory, but it didn't always happen in practice, because when submarines got back on patrol, they had to stand by for repairs. On the next patrol, again, there were very, very few targets. We were bombed by Japanese aircraft. One just missed the bridge by a few feet, and another one, probably about 50 yards forward on the port side, and the next one was down the starboard side, but they all missed safely. We were keeping a good lookout on that second patrol for a U-boat, and of course the reason we knew about the U-boat was, as you probably know, we were able to receive signals daily, and quite a lot of the time our signals were received on the surface at night when we were charging batteries. But nothing transpired from that. We did not see a U-boat at all. But we did see another coaster, which was a large one, and then we sacked this one with gunfire. We picked up the survivors of this one, and some of the crew were Japanese, and some were Indonesian, but one of the one was a woman, and she was from the island of Celebes. She was a nurse, and she was on her way from Surabaya back home to Celebes, having done her duty in the hospital. It was quite amusing, really, because amongst all the wreckage, where we tried to pick them up, there were quite a few of them didn't want to be picked up at all. And they were hiding behind boxes which were floating on the water. They would put the box between us and themselves and hide behind it. But they forgot that we could see their hands holding the box. We approached each box, and the captain would shout in English, "I see you. You please come on board. Don't be silly. We are going to look after you." But you see, a lot of the Japanese had probably been told that if they were taken prisoner, they would suffer a lot of punishment. If they were taken prisoners, a lot of punishment by the Allies. So I could understand their fears in one respect, because normally a human being out in the open sea would accept any help at all. Others were only too willing to get away and to come to us and get on board.
Japanese?
They were the Indonesians. They were very pleased about it, because they were quite happy to come on board. When they came on board, I was on the bridge at the time. They had to climb onto the bridge and then were assisted to go down the hatch through the conning tower and down below. Well, amongst our own crew were Indonesians. We had an Indonesian chef, an Indonesian officer steward, and one or two engine room staff. I'm not sure to this day what happened, but when what happened the next bit was that when they got down, the Japanese, into the control room, one of our own crew, an Indonesian, went to attack the Japanese with a big carving knife. He was restrained and the knife removed and he was taken forward. The Japanese were taken aft. They were all tied together. Now you can imagine how difficult it is in a submarine trying to hold prisoners. Well, there were not too many of them, so they kept them tied together and took them as far aft as possible, facing the after torpedo tubes. After we had picked up the survivors, we then headed home, but not before going back through the Lombok Straits, where we again had a rough time of it and we were heavily depth charged. But we were at a safe depth, that is, that no damage was done. And on we went down to Australia, down to Fremantle, and the prisoners were transferred to a prisoner of war camp. The lady in question, a nurse, who turned out to be very popular amongst the crew, she eventually settled down in Brisbane, so I understand. And the Indonesian lads that left the boat, who had been survivors, they were volunteered to go on merchant ships, and they were accepted by the Australians as to carry on with the jobs on merchant ships. So on that particular case where we picked up people who did not want to be picked up. Some of them, I noticed, the Japanese, had lots and lots of money in their belts around their waists, and they were the ones who were shy about coming on board. But when they were on board, they had no trouble at all. The only doubt about their intentions was one, you can may understand after a week or two, people start talking, and they asked in their own way, could they help us by offering their services? For instance, they would like to shave us. A lot of our lads, you see, did not shave every day, so they had beards. And the Japanese said that they would, because they had nothing else to do, they would like to shave us with their open razor, which they'd seen one or two people with open razors. And, of course, this was ruled out as not being a very good idea. In any case, we did not think they'd get many volunteers to go along and sit there and quietly ask the Japanese with an open razor to shave him.
Was there any fear of sabotage of the machinery aboard the submarine?
None at all, no. They had sailors down aft watching the Japanese all the time, sentries, and they had no problem at all. It must have been very boring for them, sitting there in a confined space. We had no cells or anything like that. It was an open compartment, and it was boring for both sides. But I think we were all jolly glad to get back.